Mama, last night you came to me in a dream. You were a goddess. Alpha, Alpha Oyo. She commands the rain. And tonight you keep reaching out to me. Now I realize that in order for me to get what I need, it is I who must come to you. Eshu, guardian of the crossroads, with your permission, I must speak to my mother. Shango, thunderous king of the heavens, my journey takes me through your kingdom.
Greetings, good afternoon to the listeners of the Shrine. It is your brother DJ Fourth World here representing for WRG 89.3 FM. And as you all are familiar, we've been doing an ongoing series interviewing different participants and those that have actually helped preserve the legacy of Fela and the Galapokuti, as well as his self-proclaimed republic known as Kalakuta. And so you've had the opportunity to hear from many notable individuals, but had to make sure that I did my due diligence to get an individual involved in this series who is definitely playing a very pivotal role, one that I'm sure you all will appreciate considering that he has helped promote the name of Fela now on a nationwide and global scale, that individual being Mr. Stephen Hendel, who's actually the producer of the musical Fela on Broadway. And he's taking his time to join us today on the Shrine. So we want to welcome him and thank him for joining us today on the program. How are you doing today, Mr. Hendel?
I'm doing very, very well, and I want to thank you for doing this and for having me.
Yes, sir. Well, it's definitely a pleasure and definitely an honor to be able to pull you away from such a busy schedule. But I knew that you would definitely be that individual that the listeners had to have heard from, you know, particularly because, you know, some would say you have kind of like an obscure position. Definitely are not one that we've known to be a fan of Fela. And I only say that because me living in Nigeria, you know, I've seen the conditions there. I've had a chance to really resonate with the people. And it's good to see that now those that, you know, are able to sympathize with what's going on there are getting involved. And you being one of those individuals, you've definitely played a big role. So, you know, for the listeners, first and foremost, tell us, how did you first learn of Fela and the Galapokuti?
Well, I just started listening to his music. I don't know how, I don't know who told me about him, but I, you know, bought one of his records, and this is about 10 years ago, and, first of all, I just was mesmerized by the music, and then by, his lyrics, and I had studied Nigerian history, Nigerian literature. I'm familiar with, Nigeria and what goes on there, and how it's developed, since the independence period and even before, and I just thought that, this was a man who gave everything to stand up for human dignity and speak truth to power, and that he used this genius gift of music to be the voice for the voiceless, not just in Nigeria, but throughout the world. As people stand up to oppression and violations of human rights and dignity.
Now, when you were first listening to his music, were you able to clearly understand the words that he was speaking? Because many people don't necessarily understand either Pidgin English or Yoruba language very clearly. So were you able to understand him?
No. And there are two things. Obviously, most of his lyrics are written in Pidgin or Yoruba, and you do have to study them. And what I did was, I got the lyrics printed out and I got translations of the lyrics. And I studied what the songs were about as well. On their own, even if you don't know anything about, literal translations of Pidgin or Yoruba, the lyrics themselves have a remarkable poetry and power. And then when you, get deep into what he was writing about and the way he was expressing it, his lyrics and his ability to express human emotions in words was every bit as profound as his ability to express human voices in instrumentation and music.
And so how long did it take you to actually complete the research and production for the musical before it even went live? And, you know, I'm assuming, of course, the research that you talked about was a part of that, but how long did it take you?
Well, it took, you know, years from the time I first heard the music to, took several years to where, you know, I sort of crystallized the idea of trying to make a musical of his life and his music and his message. And I would just listen over and over. You know, he was very, very productive in terms of how much he wrote. And, you know, there are 45 CDs, and I listened to a lot of them. And there are a few books about him. I read the books. And I kept coming back. You know, I played the music for my children. I played music for my friends, my contemporaries. And, you know, there was something in this music and in, you know, what he was singing about that would reach anybody of any age. And after a couple years of, letting, the music and the story sink in, I decided to try and get the rights. And I went to an entertainment lawyer I have a relationship with and asked him to help me track down who held the rights and how to see if I could obtain the rights to make the musical. And that took over a year because, you know, the rights were held by his estate, were held by several music companies as well. But one of the great things that came out of that process is that my attorney, as he increasingly understood what I was, you know, trying to achieve and why, came up to me one day and told me that one of his dear friends and clients was an amazing modern dance choreographer who was looking to get involved in theater. And his name was Bill T. Jones, and I should meet him. And I did not know Bill or who Bill was. And we met several times, and Bill agreed that he would direct and choreograph the piece and help create the piece once I got the rights. And it turned out that Bill is one of America's great performance artists and great creative geniuses. And, and he really was the lead creator of the show. And we created the show in a collaborative process with a number of other, non-commercial theater designers and musicians and performers over a four-year period once the process really began.
To the listeners, if you are just tuning in, we are speaking with the producer of the musical Fella on Broadway, Mr. Stephen Hendel, just giving us some background information on how he first became acclimated to Fella and his legacy. And you, of course, talked about some of the research that you did and even some of the books that you were able to engage and really learn more about his life. One of those books I would assume may have been possibly Carlos Moore's book, This Stitch of a Life. And those that are familiar with his book, you know about the reoccurrence of Fela's mother, Fumilayo Nicolapo-Kuti, into his life as a spirit. You know, she would come back and forth and give him advice. And even the opening chapter of the book, Apo Ajo, is the chapter where she introduces herself. So that influence of different books, how have the authors of these books felt about the musical's representation of Fela?
Well, I think that they've been, very, very pleased and very, very impressed. We've had a lot of Nigerians come. We've had a lot of people who grew up going to the Shrine. We've had, his family members come to the show. Yenny Kuti was just there, 2 weeks ago for three or four performances. Sandra Isidore has come to the show probably now 10 times. So people who are very familiar with Fella and and the ambiance and his persona and spirit have all been very moved and very supportive of the show and the way we depict him. When we were putting the theater piece together, we were trying to figure out what were the key relationships in his life and the key relationships we could depict on stage. And we settled on his relationship with his mother. Grew older, he became more and more involved in matters of the spirit and matters of the Orishas, and we put that into the show as we created it through a variety of workshops. And in the end, as we went from a workshop in 2007 to the off-Broadway production in 2008, we settled on using his search for his mother in the spirit world as the key, one of the key moments in the show. And when Carlos Moore came and met with us, he said, the thing that I really am impressed with and I congratulate you on is how accurately you got his relationship with his mother, which was something that we did not know and which we sort of intuitively arrived at. Has a lot of there are a lot of people who've been longtime friends, supporters, admirers with Fela, who've had deep relationships with him, and many of them have come and seen the show, and to our great pride and satisfaction, they are some of our biggest proponents and supporters.
Well, I'm going to tell you, even in addition to those that have come to see it, the critics on Broadway have also been some of the strongest proponents of this particular play, to the point to where you guys were even nominated for 11 nominations and won 3. What are your feelings about that?
Well, obviously we're very, very gratified. Broadway is very, very mainstream. It's very commercialized and homogenized. It's become, over the course of the last, last 10, 20 years, very conservative. And in general, brings to the audience, movie stars, remakes of old movies into musicals, revivals of old musicals with stars, and the new musicals tend to be very mainstream. This is a show about someone who most Americans were not familiar with and has no movie stars. So, when we opened, there was a lot of skepticism that we would be able to find an audience simply because we were telling a story about a person who nobody had ever heard of. When the reviewers came, we got amazing reviews. We've gotten amazing press, amazing publicity. We've had tremendous support from from celebrities and from musicians and actors and intellectuals, both from the African American and white communities. So, the show has found an audience and has, a quite a bit of a buzz about it in circles where where they don't tend to go to Broadway, because the entertainment on Broadway tends to be a bit watered down. We would have liked to have won more Tony Awards. We didn't. We're delighted for the ones we did, and I think considering that we tell the story about someone nobody has ever heard of in a way that Broadway does not tell stories, in a form and in a narrative structure that is much more free flow and direct than the form of the Broadway musical. You know, I think we've had an impact. I would certainly love to have all of the people listening check us out. We, you know, we're at the Eugene O'Neill Theater on 49th Street. Our website is fellaonbroadway.com. The show is amazingly entertaining. It has, you know, one of the great Afrobeat bands is on stage playing these amazing Fela Kuti compositions arranged in an amazing way. We have amazing performances. We have the best dance on Broadway. We did win the Tony for best choreography. You know, the show is an amazing visual feast. You know, we won the Tony for best costumes. The show sounds amazing. We won the Tony for best sound. And it's a, you know, it's an intense story. Fela Kuti, you know, is a man of great power, great intensity. He's one of the great musical geniuses of our lifetime, and he's also perhaps the most courageous musician and artist of our lifetime. He stood up uncompromisingly for the human spirit and for human dignity, and we tell that story, I think, in a very moving way. You know, we're very, very proud of what we've done.
To our listeners, if you are once again just joining us, speaking with our guest, Mr. Stephen Hendel, the producer of the musical Fela on Broadway. And, you know, it's interesting, of course, that you bring up, you know, the desire to have been able to win more because, you know, obviously one of the big controversies a lot of people have been talking about is the fact that it only got three. And from my research, what I've found is that the individuals that vote on the Tony Awards is a body of, you know, roughly 700 plus. And those comprise of not only individuals within the Broadway community, but also critics. And they were not allowed to vote this year. And it's been stated that these individuals will be granted the right to vote next year. In fact, even one of the critics, Michael Riedel, spoke about that in an article that he wrote. So, you know, I'm wanting to ask, first of all, is it true how many people are allowed to vote? Are the critics some of those individuals? And then, were there a 700-plus vote given this year? And if so, who were the individuals that compensated for the critics that were not allowed to vote?
Well, you know, you're asking me a lot of questions. The critics were not allowed to vote this year. This was the first time the critics were not allowed to vote. You know, since they are disinterested and have no business axes to grind, you know, I think historically, you know, they have provided sort of an unbiased view of, you know, what shows and what performances they considered to be the best or the most, you know, excellence in theater, which is what the award is, without having any personal interest involved. You know, this is the first show I have ever been involved in and I have ever produced. So I'm not a voter, and I have no real experience with, you know, how the voting takes place and, you know, what the different blocks of voters are. There certainly has been a bit of controversy over the vote and over, you know, what happened at the Tonys. And Michael Riedel, who's one of, you know, the most outspoken of the, you know, American theater personalities, has written about it extensively. But other than that, I really can't comment. You know, I think that, you know, as I said earlier, you know, we created this show for a variety of purposes, for a variety of reasons. I mean, you know, we were all very, very moved by Fela Kuti's story. We're overwhelmed by the beauty of the music. We were very motivated to tell something new in a new way on Broadway at a time where we've had, you know, many, many years of relatively conservative offerings on Broadway. And, you know, my own assessment at the end is that, you know, our show was never designed to be a mainstream show. I think we sort of fought our way into the mainstream conversation simply because it's an amazing combination of entertainment and art done, you know, in a really first-class way. And, you know, in the end, sort of the establishment that's represented by the Tony voters, you know, went with a more mainstream show. And had the critics voted this year, that might not have happened. But, you know, this year they were excluded, and, you know, we are where we are.
Well, was there any official statement or reason given why the critics were excluded? Because, I mean, this is the first time in 64 years.
You know, I don't, I think there was, well, you know, I think, you know, the decision to exclude the critics was made, you know, a number of months ago. It was sort of, I think it was made, you know, in the autumn of 2009. I don't understand why it was made. I think the initial explanation was that the critics were, conflicted. But I think that was, you know, a very that explanation was very quickly withdrawn when many people pointed out that the critics really are the least conflicted of the potential voters, since they, by definition, never have a financial stake in any of the shows. Mm-hmm. But again, this is all, you know, stuff that, you know, I'm, as a first-time producer, I'm just not, you know, part of, and don't completely understand. You know, all I can say is that, you know, we won some Tonys. We were nominated for an awful lot. You know, we think we have an outstanding show, and we, you know, we get that confirmed to us every day by, you know, the reaction of, you know, the full houses that are coming, although we do have tickets to sell, so I don't want to make anyone think they can't get a, you know, a good ticket and have a good time. You know, we've been asked by the National Theatre of London to bring the show to the Olivier stage in London in November. This is the first time the National Theatre of London of England has ever taken a Broadway musical that's running and asked to have it done on their main stage. It's going to be performed in repertory with Hamlet. And I believe, you know, their thinking is that, you know, Hamlet is the great centerpiece of English literature, English dramatic literature. And Fela is, you know, the finest contemporary expression of what theater can be. And, you know, I do believe in, you know, in many circles, in many international circles, and many professional circles, you know, Fela is, you know, viewed as, you know, really an outstanding achievement in the musical theater realm. And I think, you know, at this point, we just have to let our, you know, let the people know that if they come, they're going to have an amazing experience.
Well, I wanted to shift gears and also talk about the what would Fela do type question. And, you know, of course, there's many issues that Fela addressed in his music that not only were taking place at the time when he lived, but are even taking place now. So first and foremost, I want to ask, you know, what were some of the issues that really resonated with you that Fela talked about in his music itself?
Well, I just think, you know, just the you know, the standing up for human dignity, refusing to back down in the face of oppression. You know, he wrote this amazing music, and you know, whether it was ITT, where he, you know, called out specific leaders and corporations for, you know, for taking advantage of the country and of the people. And when, you know, and when he was done with that song and he, you know, was upset them, he came out with another song when he wrote Zombie, which became a big hit and was really taken by, you know, by the people, and they destroyed his compound. He came back and refused to pull punches in his music and pull punches in his message. And, you know, he was so powerful a figure, given the insistence and beauty of the music and the insistence and power of his lyrics, that, you know, that he was the one, you know, force in Nigeria that they didn't know what to do with, that they were afraid of. And, you know, there are very few examples in our contemporary history where, you know, an individual stands up for human dignity, you know, over and over and over again, despite enormous personal costs. And I think it's a universal story. It's an important story now as, you know, the world is sort of going into the 21st century as, you know, people should know better. Certainly there's a, you know, an instantaneous communication of news, and we're all aware of, you know, where people's rights are being abused, and, you know, and where people's voices are not being heard. And it's more important today than ever to have inspiring figures that, you know, that represent and symbolize, you know, the need for people to stand up for themselves and make sure their rights and dignity is respected.
Yes. Now, you know, one thing, of course, that was clear to anyone who listened to Fela's music or who even have seen the musical, is that he was extremely outspoken regarding the plundering and capitalization of Africa's resources. As you mentioned, he made songs like ITT that addressed these issues and its effects on citizens. Now, in the interview that we conducted with Sandra, you know, she had expressed even her initial discontent with you being the backer of the musical because of your background as an individual who has professionally worked in the field of oil commodities. But, you know, she said she had had a chance to speak with you one-on-one and really got a chance to see Steve Hindell as the person and learn about who you really were. Now, the New York Times has addressed this issue, and many people would say, okay, well, maybe this guy is the controversial person to be the backer of Fela. But what would you say to those appreciators of Fela who feel that your role as a major stakeholder would possibly constitute a conflict of interest to Fela's mission?
Well, I think that's foolishness, really. Now, you're asking me a very, you know, I mean, I want to think a little bit before I give you a final answer. You know, Fela, I think Fela speaks for everybody, or everybody of goodwill, who care about, you know, making sure people end up having their voices heard and having their human rights and dignity respected. You know, the fact that, you know, I've made my living, you know, being a trader in commodities, you know, doesn't disqualify me from being sympathetic and from understanding, you know, what Fela was speaking out against and what he was trying to accomplish and what he represented. And, you know, I think that to take a view that, you know, this person or that person, you know, can't, you know, put their, you know, their beliefs and their support behind a, you know, a voice of freedom, simply because they've had a career and have had a job in something that they've done well, is a very short-sighted kind of thing. I'm not aware of any criticism. I can understand, why someone on the surface might say something like that. But, at the end of the day, I think in this world where there's so many, it's so difficult to achieve the kinds of freedoms and conditions of human dignity that we all really should strive for and are required, it strikes me as pretty foolish to denigrate someone who's put their money where their mouth is and their time, years of time, where their beliefs are. And that's all I would say on that.
To our listeners, once again, we are speaking with Mr. Steve Hendel, executive producer of the musical Fella on Broadway. And I just wanted to be able to close out with also talking about the ending of the play. I have not personally seen the musical. However, according to those that I've spoken with who have, such as Sandra Isidore, there's a message conveyed at the end of the musical designed to inspire the attendees to assist in addressing the issues that Fella fought and died for. Now, obviously, your position as the producer of the musical is one contribution that you've already given. However, do you have any intentions or are you currently contributing any other forms of equity, be it mental, physical, or financial, towards rectifying any of the issues that presently exist in Nigeria? And how would you encourage those who have been to the play to also do the same?
Well, we certainly don't want to reveal the ending. And so I'm not going to comment on that other than to say, the ending, there are very few people who come to the play who can predict what the next 5 minutes are going to be as the show goes on. And I know people feel very, very moved and inspired when they leave the theater. The other day I was in front of the Eugene O'Neill Theater on 49th Street in the afternoon, and a middle-aged Nigerian came up to me and said, "I understand that you are one of the reasons why this show exists. I just want to thank you. We now, for the first time, have something we can take our children to and show them what they have to be proud of being Nigerian." And, the fact that, the fact is that we have a show on Broadway with a hero being a brilliant, genius black man who stands for everybody and stands for the need of speaking out for human rights and human dignity. I think that is, sort of a major cultural achievement. And I think, I think that, when people see this show and the house is roughly half black and half white, and they all have this collective experience of being entertained and moved and drawn into this kinetic, hypnotic experience. I think that, to the extent a cultural event can help make a difference in opening people's minds to, thinking about what they stand for and what the world needs. I think that right now is, sort of the focus of what the achievement of the show is.
Yeah. Do you see yourself possibly maybe even getting involved with working with organizations that are addressing issues in Nigeria? Let's say maybe even some of the issues in the Niger Delta, considering, your familiarity with that particular industry, you would probably be a huge asset to some of the organizations that are addressing the atrocities there. That's something that you would maybe see yourself getting involved in the future?
Well, I certainly would be willing to. I've been involved, as a result of being the producer and co-conceiver of the show. you know, I'd become involved in a, you know, sort of large number of organizations that, you know, deal with, you know, the issues of human dignity and human rights. I do have to tell you one thing is, you know, doing this, being the lead producer of Fella, you know, is a full-time job. I mean, you know, let's not kid ourselves. You know, this is a big production. There are a lot of people involved. There's always stuff happening. There are always needs for the show. We're going to London. We're going on tour. You know, I also do have, a full-time day job that I also, do on a full-time basis. So, you know, my personal time, you know, recently has been a little constrained. Look, what's happened to Nigeria in the Niger Delta, is one of, one of the most discouraging things on the planet. Right now the United States is very focused on this terrible oil spill in the Gulf of Mexico.
Right.
And what's been happening in the Niger Delta, you know, aside from, mistreatment of, the people who live there, is just an ongoing oil spill and an ongoing despoilation of the environment. The world's got a lot of, there are a lot of things for people of goodwill to try and focus on to improve things, and we should all be focused on that.
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. Well, I want to close out by first and foremost thanking you once again for your time with us, and also please provide the listeners one more time with information regarding if they have any interest in attending the play or just want to be able to support the effort further, any web contacts or, phone numbers, anything that you may feel they need in order to stay abreast of what's happening with Fella on Broadway.
Sure. Well, thank you very, very much. And again, thank you for inviting me onto the show. Thank you for conducting such a, an enjoyable but searching interview. The show is Fella. We're at the Eugene O'Neill Theater on 49th Street between Broadway and 8th Avenue. We have 8 shows a week. Our website is fellaonbroadway.com. And our Facebook page is Fella Musical. And, we have, actually a huge community of fans and Facebook fans. And, we're here for, we're here for the audience to come and have this amazing experience. And I hope that many of you have a chance to come up to New York and experience it.
Well, I know those that have not attended are definitely looking forward to that. So again, to our listeners, we want to thank our guest, Mr. Stephen Hensel, lead producer of Fella on Broadway, for joining us today on The Shrine. Thank you for your time, Mr. Hensel.
My pleasure, and thank you. Okay? Bye-bye.
Yes, sir. Bye-bye.